Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and on apps. Coming up on episode 12 of the World Soccer Talk podcast, we discuss which four of the 12 potential MLS cities are the most attractive from a TV rights perspective, as well as diving into which leagues got the highest TV ratings the past week and news about women's soccer coming to the A&E network and Lifetime. More to come on that. Kartik, how are you?
I'm doing quite well, Chris. How are you?
Good, good. Not too bad, other than a cold, but I'm working through it. And then, and for those who don't know, who are listening for the first time, my name's Christopher Harris, aka the Gaffer from WorldSoccerTalk.com. So, Kartik, let's dive into the first segment. I won't go through everything, just because this past week there's been so much soccer on in terms of what we've been watching. But I just wanted to kind of go through on some of the highlights. And I think for you, Kartik, too, I think it was it political this past week? So you didn't get a chance to watch as much?
Yeah, I didn't watch very much. No.
Okay, all right. Well, don't worry, because I made up for it on my side. So interestingly, for me at least, I did something different this past weekend that I haven't done before. Well, at least not in a while. And that's watching Fox Sports Go, which is the streaming app from Fox Sports. It's the free one if you authenticate through your cable or satellite system. And what I did was a split screen, because there were so many matches on this past weekend, especially on Fox, where I wanted to keep an eye on both games. So I did a lot of split screen between watching Bundesliga and FA Cup, because most of the matches were on at the same time, as well as sometimes there were two FA Cup games on at the same time. And with for those who don't know, the multi-screen kind of option on Fox Sports Go, it's something within the last 6 to 9 months, it's relatively new. But what it allows you to do is something very similar to ESPN3's Mosaic, where you can kind of basically choose either watch one match kind of on your app or your tablet, computer, whatever device you're using, or you can split it where you have two games on at the same time, or I think you can do it actually as four, or you can do a picture in picture, and you can kind of swap those things out. So it's, the weekend started for me, Kartik, on Friday. I actually started off by watching the Schalke against Frankfurt game, and we'll get more into the TV numbers a little bit later. But this one was interesting for me, the match, not so much, but interesting because of Ian Joy. And we've talked about Kate Abdo joining Fox Sports this past couple of weeks and her role at Fox Sports. And Ian Joy, we thought, would be kind of a backup presenter. But in this role, for his first time, at least under the new setup, he was an analyst. So he was on the set there with Eric Winalda, Ian Joy, and Kate Abdo. That was the week before. This past Friday, my apologies, this past Friday, he was doing co-commentary. So he was doing commentary, which anyone who's watched BN Sports for the past couple of years remembers Ian Joy from doing a lot of the championship playoff games, etc. So it was Keith Costigan that was the announcer, the main announcer, and then Ian Joy being co-commentary. So I guess what it's ended up happening is that he's just being kind of put into different situations and being used for different things. He is multi-versatile. He's a strong presence at Fox Sports and definitely, to me at least, raises the bar. But it was just interesting in terms of how Fox Sports has been utilizing him, with Kate Abdo kind of taking his place, presenting the Bundesliga coverage. And then, Kartik, the FA Cup, I mean, there's been so much discussed this past weekend on talk radio and on television about the FA Cup. And, I mean, especially from a lot of the major teams in the Premier League fielding weaker squads. But personally, I actually enjoyed the FA Cup this past weekend the most in quite some time. The Derby Leicester game on Friday was really entertaining, kind of back and forth, open-ended game. Derby could have won it, Leicester could have won it. Just a really exciting match, and had a great atmosphere too, kind of a East Midlands derby. And also it was wet conditions too. It was really wet, and that kind of made it for probably a more exciting FA Cup game than we're used to. That rolled into the weekend to Saturday. The Liverpool-Wolves game, I was surprised by how good Wolves were. I haven't had a chance to watch them much in the championship on BeIN Sports, but I think they were fifth or sixth from bottom, or maybe seventh from bottom as of last weekend. But they played surprisingly well. against a Liverpool team, not their full squad, but still a very entertaining match. And it was really competitive. It wasn't a one-sided match. And that's kind of probably one of the reasons I've actually enjoyed watching the FA Cup this past weekend more than usual, is that on a lot of FA Cup matches, it's so, I mean, you know who's going to win the match, and it's just there's very little competition. And in these two examples here, there was really competitive, and I really enjoyed it because you didn't, at the end of the game, you didn't know who was going to win it. The other interesting thing too about the Fox Sports coverage of the FA Cup is that they're doing what they did for Major League Soccer. And that is, they're actually, for Major League Soccer, they were doing a lot of halftime kind of analysis rather than talking during the Champions League or Europa League, rather than talking about those competitions, they would trump up and talk about MLS and trump up MLS's coverage. They were doing the same thing in the FA Cup weekend, is that kind of halftime or post-match, rather than digging deeper into the FA Cup, they actually talked quite a bit about the Bundesliga and did match previews for the upcoming matches that day and over the weekend. And so they're definitely pushing the Bundesliga hard. I still have the same complaint, which is that it's fine doing it on the Fox Sports broadcast, where they're trying to kind of take people that are watching coverage anyway and then kind of just have them watch the Bundesliga more. But the biggest complaint is they're not doing that outside of the Fox Sports world, on other sites or in interviews or other mediums where people aren't watching Fox Sports. But there you go. Kartik, so what about the Bundesliga? Did you get a chance to watch any of the matches this past weekend?
Yeah, I have to admit, I haven't been terribly motivated to watch the FA Cup and haven't really kept up with it. And it's a departure from me in the past because, quite frankly, I've gone on record repeatedly saying I'd rather my team win the FA Cup than qualify for the Champions League. I mean, that's how I feel about it. I'm not really enthused by European competition either. I don't watch a whole lot of Champions League, particularly at the group stage. So I guess league football is doing it for me now more than anything else, domestic league football.
What about the Bundesliga, though? Did you get a chance to watch any of the games this past weekend?
Yeah, I watched the Bremen-Bayern game, which I thought was the best game of the season that I've seen, or one of the best games of the season I've seen anywhere in Europe. Ribery and Robin back at their best, really connecting well. And it's so different if you're a defender defending Arjen Robben than Kingsley Coman. No offense towards Coman, but he's a bit of a one-trick pony. Whereas Robben has an array of moves, and you know, if he gets the ball onto his left foot somehow and is able to come inside, you're dead. Basically, Bremen learned that again. Like so many teams have learned that for many, many years. But then I thought Max Kruse being back for Bremen was massive, and they're fighting relegation as they have been the last couple of years. But based on what I saw in this match, they certainly have an opportunity to escape the drop. I mean, I think when you look at Werder Bremen, they've always had enough of a home support and an intensity around their the quality of their team to. Particularly at the business end of the season, because they've been in this position now the last three seasons. I want to say maybe it's been 4 years in a row, but certainly the last three seasons, and they've gotten out the previous two times. Kruse, of course, came from Mönchengladbach. Well, he was at Wolfsburg for a year in between, but was a big part of Mönchengladbach getting into the Champions League a few seasons ago, getting into that elite top four in Germany, and then played a little bit disappointingly with Wolfsburg last season, but he had a really good game coming back from injury. And I thought you're seeing what might happen to Bayern away from home. We saw it against Freiburg the previous week on that Friday game, that they don't have the firepower right now this season to put teams away from home as we've seen repeatedly. And I watched number of the highlights of the Leipzig.
Yes. Actually, on the Bremen game too, I just want to add too, because I watched this one also. So this is one where I had the split screen too, because I had Chelsea-Brentford on one screen, which was a complete walkover. You mean yes, it's a West London derby. Yes, you hope it's going to have a lot of the drama in the FA Cup, but it wasn't there. It was just kind of one-sided. So half of my eye was watching that one, but the rest of it was watching the Bremen-Bayern game, which I enjoyed. And actually, Max Kruse, like you said, had a couple of volleys right over the crossbar that could have gone in. If they'd gone in, it'd be in a totally different game, but it was entertaining to watch. The one thing I'd like to add about that is that I really enjoyed Eric Rinaldo's co-commentary on this one. And he's the type of person that I think at Fox, they've tried to figure out where he best fits. And to me, he's got such a good reading of the game. As a former professional footballer, he's able to express kind of things that, say, a Warren Barton can't, in terms of kind of keeping an eye out for certain things, or when a player comes onto the pitch, keep an eye out for this guy because I've watched him and he's going to do this or that. And for the most part, similar to Taylor Twellman, it's a lot of kind of foretelling. I think they've got a keen eye for analysis. And Wijnaldum, for me, is the type of guy that makes me want to watch the Bundesliga more. And this particular weekend, I did watch more Bundesliga than I normally do. But again, too, it's kind of, again, it's the Bundesliga's problem is that all the games seem to be on at the same time that the English games are on. So my royalty, it's split in terms of kind of which ones I watch. But I did enjoy the game, and I thought it was really good. And the other thing, too, about the FA Cup on the Chelsea-Brentford game, you had the FA Cup ticker in the top right corner, so you could see kind of the scores coming in. So if there was anything interesting to watch, you could always kind of keep an eye out for that. So I was able to kind of keep an eye on FA Cup results, Chelsea-Brentford, and Werder Bremen against Bayern Munich. And I enjoyed it. And it was really kind of the Wijnaldum co-commentary that won me over.
The Bremen-Bayern game was going on at the same time as Hoffenheim and Leipzig, second and third in the league entering this match day. And that was a spectacular game based on all the highlights. And I've gone out of my way to find as many highlights as I could of that, the YouTube Fox Soccer feed, ESPN FC, etc., as well as the in-game coverage that was going on during that Bremen-Bayern game. And Leipzig is not. There was a lot of thought that after they had the unfortunate performance at the Allianz Arena, where Forsberg got sent off in the first 20 minutes in the last game before the winter break, that they would be in this position where they would just fall off and Borussia Dortmund would emerge. They'd finish second. That's not happening. In fact, what we've seen is coming out of the break, if you're going to have to say who's looked stronger, I think Leipzig's looked stronger than Bayern. In these first two match days after the winter break. So the gap is still 3 points. Leipzig doesn't look like they're going to fall off at all at this point. I think they probably will somewhere down the road, but it's not going to be the dramatic collapse many had envisioned. And look, Bayern are not very convincing right now. Now, again, we're holding Bayern to a higher standard because we're so used to them beating teams 3-0, 4-0, 5-0 the final season under Heinkens, and then also the 3 years under Pep Guardiola, and even really under Van Gaal until the final season when they were getting beaten by Klopp's Dortmund, but they were still dealing with everyone else in the Bundesliga, usually by very decisive scorelines. So there's a little bit of pressure in Ancelotti's setup, but they don't seem very convincing, and I think they will win the league, but Leipzig's still pushing them.
The other thing I liked too was actually Costigan and Ronaldo did a great job of, during the Bremen against Bayern game, is letting the viewers know what was happening.
Right, yeah.
In the other games, awesome. In the Leipzig-Hoffenheim game. So to me, it's they're doing a great job. And that's the thing too, in terms of, we'll get more into this a little bit later in terms of the TV ratings. The TV ratings are pretty terrible, unfortunately, for a whole host of different reasons. But they're doing the best that they can with what they've got. And actually, if somebody is wanting to get into the Bundesliga, I think they do a good job of kind of not just focusing on that one match, but talking about the other games that have significance too. And that was a great example.
And I have to say they've got a couple things going for them. One, they did that, covering the games really in-game well because they had their own announcers providing voiceovers and Costigan and Wijnaldum this time. So I did not watch the FA Cup. I was watching that game intently because I also wanted the updates from Leipzig-Hoffenheim. And you just mentioned they were essentially covering the whole league at once, so all the 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time kickoffs. Secondly, I think the 10 a.m. kickoffs this year in the Premier League, it just seems like the Premier League is so obsessive about scheduling the bigger sides and the games that might be competitive and interesting in time slots where they can isolate the games and have them on global television, that what's left at the 3 p.m. British Standard Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time kickoffs are a bunch of leftover games, which is making the Bundesliga and Fox a little more appealing to me in that time slot, believe it or not.
It does, but at the same time, I think NBC does such a great job of the coverage that once that 7:30 to 9:30 Eastern Time Saturday morning game ends, is that 9:30 to 10 o'clock gap, you're kind of pulled in, whether it's Neil Ashton or Rebecca Lowe or Steve Bauer. So to me, it gives me reason to keep on watching it till the 10 o'clock game kicks off. And then for me, at least personally, Swansea's usually in that 10 o'clock time slot, so not the most favorable one. But you mean, I'm not going to miss that type of match. But I think this probably is the same for a lot of our listeners too, is that no matter what team they support, you know what I mean, they're going to be featured sometimes in that 10 o'clock game, or maybe they'll watch Gold Rush just for kind of a highlights package. And just the timing, the Bundesliga games on a Saturday morning at 9:30, yes, that invitation's there, but it's not, I don't know, slowly but surely, hopefully more people will get into the Bundesliga. But I don't think it's a slam dunk yet, though. Even with the stacked Premier League scheduling that they've done it, like you've said, Kartik.
Yeah, so that was the good. Now, let me tell you the bad. The bad was that right after that game, I was pretty fired up to watch Leverkusen Gladbach after those two games, because they're also the Leipzig-Hoffenheim game. Again, I'm not paying attention to FA Cup. I went to find Leverkusen Gladbach, and it was on Fox Soccer Plus, which I don't get, which...
I think
I would venture to say 95% of our people don't get. And
that's the thing, though, Kartik. I think that one was on Fox Sports 2.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
It wasn't?
No. So they were showing auto racing. So I was unable to watch the game and ended up turning on Southampton-Arsenal. The game was already 3-0 or something, so I turned it off and was done with football for the day. So that's that was a disappointment. I had assumed that game would be on Fox. I thought it was on Fox Sports 1, then I saw it was the FA Cup. I said, okay, so it's on Fox Sports 2. There was auto racing on, and then I found it on the program guide on Fox Soccer Plus. So that was disappointing because I wanted to see if Gladbach could get things going. They are in a real rut right now. Leverkusen has begun to play a little bit better recently, and I saw Leverkusen here in the state of Florida last month. I was unable to watch that game, though.
The Southampton game against Arsenal, what a joke that was. I mean, to me at least, as a neutral, I mean, it was completely a B team from Southampton.
Well, they had just played at Anfield 2 days earlier,
exactly,
in the EFL Cup. So I think this is the big talking point now in England, is that the two-legged tie of the League Cup semifinals is making teams who are still alive in that cup competition take the FA Cup less seriously. We saw that with Liverpool as well. They were in that same game on Wednesday with Southampton. The problem is, I think the two legs of the League Cup semifinals make that cup very unique and very, to me, useful. I like the two legs.
Yep.
Now, the timing of the two legs is a little bit poor because it comes right after this Christmas period, this Boxing Day period, with all the run of fixtures, and then right as the FA Cup is starting in round three and round four for teams in the Premier League and Championship. So that is a bit of a problem, but I like the two legs. But look, Southampton has a deep academy. We know that every player at that club is in the shop window, so why not take the opportunity? It didn't work out, but
right.
I totally understand it.
Yeah, me too. It was a throwaway game, and Arsenal looked good, but it was against a very, very weak Southampton team. But to me,
but this is the thing about Arsenal. They look, to me, they look better than any team in the Premier League by a pretty wide margin when they're playing well. Mm-hmm. They look better, much better than Chelsea, much better than Man United, Liverpool, Man City, Spurs. Spurs at times look very good. But Arsenal, when they're rampant, they look like they can beat anyone in Europe other than maybe Barcelona and Real Madrid. But then they just have these stinkers, and I know we'll get to that as we get into midweek.
Yeah, so let's move to midweek then. So that was our weekend, tons of FA Cup and Bundesliga for me. I didn't get a chance to watch much of any of the Africa Cup of Nations. I wanted to, but just it just clashed with other games that were going on. But I'm looking forward to seeing the final this weekend. So midweek for me, I watched the Liverpool against Chelsea game, of course, and also the Man United against Hull match. From a TV coverage perspective, the one thing that jumps out at me from these two matches, and it's something I haven't heard much of, and haven't heard anyone talk about it, but it, to me, is the product placement by NBC Sports. And this was kind of low. They basically pulled out their Microsoft Surface tablets. And this is Kyle and Robbie Musto.
Kyle and Robbie were uncomfortable with that. And then they also had a Volkswagen feature on the pitch or from the pitch with other scores, which I had never seen before. I can't remember if that was Tuesday or Wednesday.
I missed that.
It was the same thing they normally do, but they were branding it. I think it was two. It might have been both days. So there were those two very noticeable things that took place this week, which is a positive sign that they're selling ads and that they've been able to make the to monetize the Premier League effectively, which is good for soccer fans across the country. But the product placement was odd, and I have to admit, I'm not a Microsoft fan, so I was about to tweet something very snarky about Martino and Musto and their lack of comfort, and Kyle in his head is thinking, you know what, I wish this was a Mac type of thing, but I just decided, I'll let it be. But it was, they looked uncomfortable.
Yeah, they did. And they were pretending to hold these tablets and to draw on the screen with kind of a kind of pen and to show. But to me, it looked
Microsoft's
really fake.
Thing again, because they're trying to show what Microsoft has had is that on the high end, they're having a problem competing with Apple, and on the low end, they're having a trouble competing with the Google Chromebook. So they're trying to show the versatility of their devices.
Right.
I get that. And they're forcing that into some sort of segment about tactics in football.
Yeah.
I understand from the sponsor's perspective why it was done, but from our perspective as football viewers, I'm not sure. I don't think it was particularly useful.
Yeah. So from Microsoft's perspective, it's probably a win-win because we're talking about it. But and they were kind of focusing on the touchscreen abilities with the Surface. But to me, it was so fake because the what we saw on the screen was what we usually see. There's nothing different where you could see them kind of drawing circles around players or anything like that. It was just the typical. Looked like pre-recorded analysis stuff. And to me, if this was Fox Sports that had done this, they'd have been so ridiculed on Twitter and places kind of making fun of them. And to me, NBC Sports, yes, they're making some good money, I'm sure, on these types of ads and things. But they don't have to do that, though. It's kind of, to me, it's kind of stooping a little bit too low in terms of their coverage. They could still keep it kind of at a level that's intellectual, intelligent, and thought-provoking rather than stooping down to a level which they look like kind of, I don't know, cheap salespeople, basically. So that rubbed off on me in the wrong way possible, in the worst way possible. I just really did not like that at all. So, Kartik, I'm trying to think in terms of midweek games, too. That was probably about it for me, but what about you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I try to keep an eye on everything. Liverpool-Chelsea was an entertaining game, but I tried to keep an eye on Sunderland, Spurs, and Arsenal-Watford, particularly at the same time. Burnley-Leicester, which was a controversial game. But look, Jamie Vardy has a reputation for diving, so even when he gets fouled legitimately in the area, which I think he might have been in this, he may have been, he may also have been looking for the contact from Heaton. It happened twice. He's not going to get calls anymore. So that's something to know as Leicester fights relegation. They're not getting the calls they were getting last season. And then the Swansea game was also interesting for me. And look, I think it makes no sense to me. You know, you're thinking at the beginning of the day, Arsenal is I believe they entered the day 8 points back, okay, of Chelsea. Chelsea could lose at Anfield. And then Arsenal, they got Watford at home. Watford's struggling. Watford's one of those teams that we've now become concerned about being in a relegation fight. They just sold Ighalo for a big sum to China. I'm not sure you want to do that when you're fighting relegation, but they're never going to get offered that kind of money. I mean, it's a Chinese thing. The Chinese bubble might burst by the next transfer window. Who knows? So you take that money and go. So that this is transfer deadline day, and they're in that position. And you're you're in the position where Arsenal setting up the big game on Sunday, the game everybody is thinking about and talking about, could cut the gap to 5 points, and potentially they could repeat defeat and beat Chelsea again, although they have a poor record against Chelsea the last few years, but they won that first meeting earlier this season at the Emirates. They could cut it to two. Well, guess what happens? Chelsea is unfortunate not to beat Liverpool. Costa has a penalty save. Luiz has that brilliant free kick. And Arsenal lay a stinker and lose at home to Watford, a relegation-threatened team. And it's a 9-point gap and games at Stamford Bridge, and now we're thinking the title race might be over. So it was a big day.
Yeah.
And so having NBC, having Premier League extra time and having Goal Zone, which they did have on Tuesday, but they did not have on Wednesday, because there were only three games on Wednesday, and then the game on the main channel, the Liverpool-Chelsea game, made it an extraordinary of channel surfing in the second half. And Arsenal fans aren't going to want to hear it or talk about it, but it was useful, again, to see the demise of Arsenal in real time while Chelsea is playing at the same time. And the gap is 9 points now.
Yeah, and we'll have to wait and see until Saturday morning. I think it's the early kickoff, the Arsenal-Chelsea game on NBCSN. And then we'll see exactly who this Arsenal side is, because it is inconsistent. You were talking just a few minutes ago about it kind of being one of the most attractive teams playing when they're firing on all cylinders. And then we come back to kind of the Watford game where they just kind of self-combust. So we'll see. We'll see. It's a big match. It's at Stamford Bridge. And it should be an entertaining one, at least. And I think after that game, we'll probably know where Arsenal stands in terms of this Champions League title.
Right, and I think it becomes problematic for NBC as they try and promote the league in the final 3 months of the season, mm-hmm. 3+ months of the season. How do they handle it if Chelsea happens to win that match? And it's
right, running from away TV with pers- it.
Yeah, it's becoming, we're getting to that point, because what we were saying last month was, or 2 months ago now, Chelsea was on a record push as far as points were concerned, and there were a lot of good teams in the league behind them. So what was going to happen was Chelsea's pace was going to, they were going to come off that pace a bit, and one of the chasing pack would probably get hot, whether it was Liverpool or Man City or Spurs or whoever, or Arsenal, and then it would be a title race between those two teams. What has instead happened is there was obviously the loss to Spurs at White Hart Lane, but other than that, Chelsea's continued to win games. They know, and then now they've drawn this game, which looked like a banana peel, and everybody else is dropping points. So, in fact, the opposite of what we had thought, or maybe we had hoped would happen. And this is bizarre, Chris, because this is not on paper one of the better teams in the history of this division, but Antonio Conte has an amazing record in league in Italy, and he's doing it in England. This team could historically go down, at least in terms of results, as the best Premier League team ever. And It's hard to make a case against them now, especially when they started so poorly, right? They've just, since the end of September, they've dropped 5 points in the league. I believe in 17, 18 matches. They have taken 49 of their last possible 54 points. I don't remember a team in the history of this league being that hot mm-hmm. for that long a period of time. That's almost half a season. 19 games is half a season. So 18 games, they've taken 49 points. That's almost 3 points a game.
Right.
It's almost perfection.
Yeah, and I think it's Tottenham Hotspur that's probably the only team really that has a fighting chance of really narrowing that gap. And really disappointing to get a 0-0 tie at Sunderland. I mean, it's a great point for Sunderland. But I think Spurs is kind of, at least the neutral, I'm a neutral in this perspective, kind of last hope to see if they can make us a real title race.
So after those games, we had deadline day, and during those games, but then, of course, after we had the deadline day special, and we're thinking, okay, are Spurs going to make a move? Are they going to stand pat with this team? We understand the stadium situation. We're hearing some of the same stuff we heard out of Arsenal 10 years ago, right? They really can't spend. They're rebuilding White Hart Lane. They got to be financially healthy when they move into the new facility in 2 years. So they're standing pat, and they're promoting youth players like Harry Winks into the first team, and he's done quite well. And Tom Carroll, who's now at Swansea, did quite well. But they didn't make any moves. So deadline day, the special that came on after, and I watched Twitter. Twitter had Sky Sports, which was great that they did that, and this is the first time that it was rather useless. Nothing happened of significance among the top six teams. Nobody. Nobody of significance was added by any of the top six teams in this window. I guess technically by Man City, but he was actually signed in the summer and signed with the intent of coming in the winter, right? So that was not news to anyone that he was with Manchester City. So what we got was a lot of discussion of the bottom of the table. I think Palace and Burnley had very good days on Tuesday. Burnley getting Robbie Brady is just a signing I absolutely love. I think huge signing. Crystal Palace made a couple classic Allardyce moves, and I think look, I know there's been the problem with Sakho going back to the tour here of the U.S. or the drugs test last year, which had him suspended in the Europa League final, which they lost to Sevilla. But I'm not sure if, given Liverpool's back line, I'm not sure it was a good idea to loan him out. And Klopp has made his decision. This will help Palace. That might be the exact type of player Allardyce needs, because Allardyce gets the most out of those types. And I think he's probably very happy to have him. I think Swansea, great window getting Olsen and Tom Carroll, both of whom have helped the team already. But they did that early in the window, right? They didn't do that on deadline day, so there's no suspense on deadline day. And then we didn't really have anything of significance from anyone else. Yeah. And it was disappointing.
It was a downer, but I wasn't surprised. I wasn't expecting anything major. I think times have changed, Kartik. You know, it's like from a couple of years ago where it was just craziness. Maybe this summer we'll see some.
Suarez and Carroll and Torres, and then Spurs that day were making bids on everybody, on Aguero and Llorente and all these players who eventually made it their way to the Premier League. And I remember Man City made a late bid for Sebastian Larsson because Roberto Mancini decided he wanted him at the last minute and it didn't get in time. And there was all kinds of craziness in that. David Luiz for Matic, that swap, January 31st. There was so much just four or five years ago, so much going on, like the summer window. And then today or this week, it was a dud. The entire window really was a dud, with the exception of those three teams I named: Palace, Burnley, and Swansea. And in Swansea and Palace's case, they have new managers. In Burnley's case, I think what happened is that they haven't spent money at all, even in their previous promotions. And this time it looks like they're going to stay up. So the board has given Sean Dyche a license to bring in and secure one or two really good buys that could, and I think Westwood's another good one, that could keep them in the division. And then, of course, getting Joey Barton back, which we knew would happen when he got released by Rangers, has also helped them. And that's that doesn't go down as a transfer because he had been released by Rangers. But that's another important one. I think he's just he fits Burnley well. He probably never should have gone north of the border.
Right. So, Kartik, before we move on to the next segment to talk about TV and streaming news, anything else you want to point out or anything you want to mention? Anything else you watched?
I thought it was interesting all week. Gab Marcotti has been in the ESPN FC studios. Craig Burley likes to get combative with him. So it's been very, very good television to watch. And Marcotti doesn't back down. So right. Now Marcotti's usually in London and he's on a lot. And he and Burley argue, but he'll be on for a segment here and there. He's been in the studio and they've been talking about, particularly with Chelsea's success, the talk about Kun Aguero potentially being sold by Pep Guardiola, which is something I have to say as a Manchester City fan that doesn't surprise me. I thought that might happen when Guardiola came in, honestly. Aguero's just not his type of player. All of that has made for good television. And then it's called Football. I have on my DVR. I'm glad that that series is back. I know I criticized NBC for not giving us any information about when the next episodes would air. Well, we got them this week. I think West Ham and was it Watford or Crystal Palace?
Southampton,
yeah. So I'm looking forward to watching those. I haven't been able to watch those yet, but I'm excited that show is back.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's move on to TV streaming news. And Kartik, a big announcement today by the NWSL and the A&E network. Can you tell us what you know about this deal?
Yeah, I've been keeping track of this deal, and it's going to be pretty good. It's going to be good for NWSL. They're going to get these games on national television, and the A&E networks are putting some money, some equity into the league, which props the league up. The league is strengthening, and But the way they've been strengthening the last few years is to attach women's teams to men's teams. So that started with Portland, Houston, Orlando, and now North Carolina this year will be attached to the Carolina Railhawks of the NASL. So there's there is some improvements in NWSL, but there's some concern already about the time slots of these games, right? They're on Thursdays, mm-hmm. which was the same time slots that the defunct PAX network owned by Bud Paxton from our neck of the woods, Palm Beach, had shown the WUSA in the early 2000s. Now, I have to say, soccer is astronomically more popular in this country today than it was in 2003. And it is, we have Twitter, we have Reddit, we have all these things that drive the soccer fandom. I think this will do okay. It's just, it's difficult. The start times of games for people who work during the weekdays. It also
so Kartik, could put just for listeners to understand. So the start time is going to be 4 p.m. on Easter on Thursdays.
Right, with a pregame show on Thursdays at 3:30. Right. So the hope is, I've already talked to a couple people today, just very casually. I get deeper into it in the next few days, and hopefully I have an article up at World Soccer talk about this. Talk to a couple of people around women's soccer. In the last 3 or 4 hours before we recorded this, and there's hope that the ticket problem can be offset by young girls coming out of school early on those days. Maybe their school lets out at 2:30 and they get to the stadium by 4. I'm not quite sure that that's a sound strategy. I'm hoping the TV drives fans to the league by watching a game. Maybe the attendance is down for that Thursday 4 p.m. kickoff, but then they go the next week to their venue, because it's difficult in a sport or in a league, in particularly NWSL, that is so dependent on ticket revenue, mm-hmm. more so than TV revenue or sponsorship, ticket revenue to kick off games at 4 p.m. on Thursday. So that's a concern. We'll keep an eye on that. I'm going to talk to a couple more people before I churn out that article, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it on the show next week.
Yeah, so those 25 games. So there's going to be 25 games that are going to be on in that time slot, that 4 o'clock Eastern time, and it's going to be on Lifetime, which is one of the networks that's owned by the parent company, A&E Networks. And Kartik, I don't know about you, but what I guess in some ways, like with Lifetime, it's a perfect kids come home after school, and maybe the mom's been watching Lifetime. I don't know. But basically, it's kind of a great way for kind of the kids coming home from school or college and be able to switch on Lifetime channel and watch women's soccer. I don't see this as kind of a play for the men. I see this as kind of a play for the women's audience. I don't see a lot of men gravitating to the Lifetime channel to watch kind of the programming there.
It is an incredibly mainstream channel, though, to be on.
Yeah.
I have to say that. So it is the kind of channel that, you know, I kind of wish maybe, well, the Premier League has got the NBC connection now, but when the Premier League was on Fox, I would have taken a couple games on A&E and Lifetime and TLC and those kinds of channels, just because I think, or Discovery Channel, those types of profile channels, I just think there are a whole lot more viewers than for sports channels that might give soccer a chance. The people who watch ESPN and Fox Sports 1, half of them have some sort of bias or prejudice against our sport. I hate to say that. American sports fans, those of you who like soccer, football also can write to us about that. But I always think that there's just this condescension. So I like having it on Lifetime. And I think, again, there might be kids who come home from school, young girls who watch it. Now, will they, if they are in home market, will they still be able to go to the games? Mm-hmm. Because there are 25 games in this package. There are, I think that they'll probably showcase Orlando, Portland, North Carolina, and Houston more because of their venues. But let's say, Evangel, let me just take the two teams I'm most familiar with, Orlando and North Carolina. Let's say they have 3 or 4 home games each that are starting at that time. I think it really could put a limitation on the attendance that they have. But overall, it's an upside. I'm not trying to poke holes in the deal. I'm very happy about this deal, and I think it's a very good thing. But there is that potential downfall.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too will depend on the ticket sales in terms of how closely these NWSL clubs work with the different schools, the different soccer clubs, the different youth organizations, and try to find ways to kind of make it as easy as possible to get men, women, children, everyone to these games, but especially young girls who fall in love with these players. They're great role models. Lifetime, it's in some ways it's a strange network to have it on, but then again, for the Premier League, who would have thought that we'd be having matches on CNBC every Saturday at 10 a.m.? I guess we'll have to wait and see how it does, but at least they're putting money into the league and helping with the financial stability, which is huge, and then hopefully they can grow from there and get bigger and better. But okay, Kartik, let's move on to the next segment. The next news item is MLS Live is back, and so this is the streaming product from Major League Soccer. It's actually, the company is owned by ESPN, and they put together the streaming packages for the games that have been shown. And the pricing for this year, for the 2017 season, is going to be $80 a year, or you can sign up for $15 a month. Also, there's a single club package, so if you want to just subscribe to watching, say, Seattle Sounders games, it's $70 for the season, and that gives you access to all of the MLS games, including all the Saturday broadcasts, as long as there's no blackouts. I mean, that's the only thing. You can always get around it with VPNs, but that is the MLS Live streaming package. And according to Chris Schlosser, who's head of digital at MLS there, they've upgraded the entire system for MLS Live. There's an all-new website, Roku and Apple TV apps, and also they've updating the mobile, and they're also rebuilding the Chromecast, which will be coming soon too. So they've made a lot of changes. The pricing's about the same as last year, and I guess the couple of years ago, the plan was to have ESPN launch a streaming product that was kind of a paid-for service. But at this point, it looks like MLS and ESPN has decided just to stick with MLS Live for streaming. So there you go.
Yeah. I think there was some disappointment about this announcement, but it was getting so late in the game, I don't think anyone could have expected anything different. And we'll wait and see if the rebuild app and everything is good and what happens next season. Although I do have to say that monitoring social media, people were kind of put out by it, and also by the increase in price. Considering there are two new teams, I guess that could be justified. But, so anyway, we also have the latest numbers of how many households all the cable networks are in, but we're particularly concerned about networks that cover soccer. And once again, declines across the board, Chris, with the exception of Fox Sports 2 that got picked up by a couple more services and had a marginal increase of about 235,000 households get Fox Sports 2 than did in December. But BN lost over 500,000 homes, BN in English, the main BN. ESPN, similar loss in homes as BN. Same thing with ESPN2. ESPNU, which shows soccer from time to time, 600,000, over 600,000 homes dropped. ESPNU, Fox Deportes, which starts with a kind of small base already, lost almost 500,000 households. Fox Sports 1 lost more households than any of them, than any of the ESPN networks, with 634,000. And then NBCSN, which, of course, we talk about every weekend on the show, Premier League, lost almost 750,000 household viewers in 2 months. Not a good time in the cable sports industry. Cable itself is down to under 100 million subscribers, almost over 750,000 subscribers drop cable systems, cord cutters, whatever, in this 2 month period. And now cable itself, and I think this is more interesting for sports other than soccer, cable itself is now only covering the top cable channels, only covering 75-78% of American homes. ESPN is actually now only 74% of American homes. I'm going to digress for a second, Chris, and just mention this for fans of other sports. There were deals signed, long-term deals signed with ESPN by the NBA, by college football bowl games, the college football playoff, things that took long-term network properties off of network television and put it on cable and put it on ESPN. And ESPN was able to afford these rights because they charge, their carriage fees are like $40 per person, right? I mean, you get your cable bill at the end of the month, you're paying $200, $40 of that is for ESPN, and which you may not know because you don't have a la carte pricing and that kind of breakdown. I'm wondering what's going to happen because now you're seeing less and less exposure for those other sports. It doesn't affect us as much because we've never had really that network penetration, although the NBCSN numbers dropping should concern soccer fans. But I wonder what's going to happen in other sports where they had taken themselves off network and put themselves on cable. In the NBA's case, they still obviously have a lot of games on ABC, but in NBA's case, they wanted the money that came from cable subscriptions, thinking that would offset any loss in viewership because at the time, ESPN was in 90% or 92% of the homes of the 100% ABC has. Mm-hmm. Now it's in 74% of those homes, and it's dropping every month. Worrying times in the industry.
The times, they are changing. And I think a lot of this, too, is cord cutting. I mean, a lot of people kind of looking at this and dropping their cable or satellite subscriptions and then just picking up streaming services.
Yeah.
I'm in that same boat. I still have Comcast, but I'm waiting for this new Fubo TV to come out. And at that point, I may drop cable completely and just get internet and then have a streaming package. So, it's worrying times. Worrying times, definitely, for TV.
So in theory, I guess it's possible that when we say ESPN's now only in 74% of the homes that would have ABC or CBS or something, that maybe that's not accurate because the cord cutters, we're assuming they're going and getting rabbit ears and putting it with their television and still having network TV while they're streaming their other services. Maybe they've just cut networks out of it too, and that's why if you're a Fubo TV or a Sling, getting ABC and ESPN and now Hulu's trying to strike back because they have all those programs from those four major networks. Maybe that's now offsetting that too. Maybe that's part of it. I think we're just evolving, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely, most definitely. So speaking of Comcast, my favorite cable company. So Comcast this week, news came out there from about Comcast is going to produce a Comcast Xfinity app. And they're going to put it on Roku. So as of today, there's no Comcast app on Roku. So if you want to watch Comcast programming that you subscribe to, you can't. But when this new app becomes available, you can add it to your Roku and watch your Comcast through there. But so the big news is that Comcast is going to charge you extra for this. So they're charging, I think it's $9.95 extra if you're a Comcast subscriber to be able to get access to this Roku app. But they will give you, I think, a $2.50 credit if you go ahead and basically don't have to use your cable box any longer. So it ends up being like $7 and change to have the benefit of have being able to watch, you know, soccer and everything else through your Roku for Comcast. It's kind of crazy in the whole thing scheme of things to me, too, because if I was Comcast, I would probably give this away just to encourage people, make it easy as possible. But then on the other side of things, I mean, Comcast and other cable companies make so much money from renting out cable boxes and DVRs each month that they're probably just trying to limit the losses a little bit. But I don't know. It's this one's kind of stinks, Kartik.
Yeah, it does. And something else that I think is kind of stinks is that BN, I mean, maybe they're making things more accessible. But you can watch the Cup of African Nations final in Arabic with BN Sports on YouTube by paying $6.99 pay per view. But why not just pay the $9.99 a month for Fubo and you get BN in English for the whole entire month?
Yeah, but if
at least making it more accessible,
right? And if you do speak Arabic or what you want to watch your soccer games in Arabic, at least there's the option. I mean, I guess. I don't know how many subscribers they would get for on this pay-per-view basis, but at least there's the option there that they can do it kind of to watch the Africa Cup of Nations final. So Kartik, lots of news from NASL and USL this past week in terms of schedules and kind of some details emerging from both leagues. Any news on the TV front in terms of what we can expect and where we can watch these games?
Yeah, I've got a lot of background information here, and I'm not going to reveal too much, but let me just say that I don't believe NASL will be scaling back as much on their television packages as maybe I had thought or others had anticipated. So look for that in the next few weeks for something to be shown up there. I think they feel like they have to remain visible. They have to remain on television, whether it's the same partners. I think you could safely assume One World Sports will no longer be a partner, but I think they probably will renew with CBS and very well might with BN. And that would be certainly a big boon for them to stay on television. And I'm not quite sure how they're going to barter it and trade it. Their financial position is not what it was a year ago, but they have to make a go of it. As far as USL is concerned, USL Productions is ramping up their coverage for the 2017 season. They will have a game a week on ESPN3, and they will have, I want to say, four or five games, I've been told, on ESPNU, which we just mentioned in the last segment, has been dropping subscribers at a pretty alarming rate, like all these cable channels, but even more so than the others. And the league final is probably going to be on ESPN2. I know nothing's been formally announced yet, but that's my understanding.
Yeah, that's good news. Good news for fans of lower league soccer in the United States. Two quick items, Kartik, before I let you kind of give us some news from NBC. But the first is that Fox Soccer To Go, which is the paid streaming service online, for the month of February, they're offering a seven-day free trial. So with the Champions League coming up, FA Cup matches in the fifth round, Copa Libertadores, there's a lot of action, Bundesliga, of course, Scottish Premiership. Basically, so if you're interested in any of those and you want to sign up for the free trial to Fox Soccer To Go, check out worldsoccertalk.com for the links to that or Google Fox Soccer To Go. And then Kartik, Landon Donovan is coming back. So it looked like he's passed on the opportunity to play with Real Salt Lake. So he hasn't made a final decision yet in terms of if he's going to be playing for the 2017 season. But he will be on TV on Friday night for the USA against Jamaica friendly from Chattanooga on FS1. And he's going to be in the booth with John Strong, the main announcer, Stu Holden, who's doing a great job at Fox as a co-commentator and analyst. And he will be the third person in the booth as a co-commentator. So looking forward to that. It'll be interesting to see how the dynamic is between those three. I thought Landon and JP did a great job at Copa America last summer. And who knows, maybe this is kind of the first of many games that Landon Donovan will do for Fox Sports. Maybe Fox is trying to recruit him and convince him to make this a full-time gig, especially with the World Cup coming up and lots of opportunity to be involved underneath the Fox Sports umbrella.
Yeah, we'll see how he does if he continues to like this. He did very well to Copa America. I'm not terribly enthused about these January friendlies. I didn't even watch the game against Serbia. I understand Dark and Twelman were pretty good, but I didn't give any commentary on that earlier because I didn't watch it, quite honestly. And they had a studio, I know, Sebastian Salazar and Gomez and Casey Keller, probably also pretty good, but again, I didn't watch it. But we'll see how Landon Donovan does. That might give me incentive to actually watch this match. Let me bring up what is happening this weekend. Earlier that day, the U.S. game is on Friday night, right? So Saturday morning, we talked about Arsenal and Chelsea, the big game, the game that could essentially close the door on the Premier League title hopes for Arsenal. That is taking place at the Emirates in North London. All three of NBC's on-air talent, or on-site on-air talent, will be at the game. Arlo White, Graham Lasseau, and Lee Dixon. That game should end around 9:30 Eastern time, which is a 2:30 local time.
Yep.
They will do their post games. They will make a mad dash to 3.5 miles, and it is 3.5 miles. It's a little further than some other. It's not as close as Everton, Liverpool, even West Brom and Villa and Birmingham City. I think are all within 2 or 3 miles of each other. The 3.5 miles in London traffic to White Hart Lane to cover Spurs. Now, thankfully, they will not be going through Trafalgar Square like Manchester United does often and gets delayed in London traffic, but they are going to have to do that, set up and be ready to do their pregame bits at 5 p.m. local time, noon Eastern Standard Time. This is going to be very, very interesting. As part of the Excellent Adventure, as they're billing it, Arlo Lee and Graham's Excellent Adventure, they will be tasked with taking selfies along London landmarks on the way in North London, logging their time and arrival at White Hart Lane in the race to this second match. And they'll also be very instructive about North London traffic on match days in that part of the city. It is very, very congested in that part of London. And they'll be, I guess, they'll be on Tottenham Court Road or whatever, trying to get to White Hart Lane. So it's gonna be exciting. It's going to be kind of a fun thing. No word on whether NBC has backups slated in the event that they don't get there. I'm guessing what they will do is they'll just go to the global feed for a period of time. If it comes to that, let's hope it doesn't.
Kartik, you missed the best part of the whole that whole news segment on those guys. They're taking motorbikes.
Yeah, they're taking motorbikes and motorbike taxis, and that should be that also allows you to take the selfies and take the pictures in a way that you don't if you're in an actual taxi cab in an actual car or on a London transport and transport for London, excuse me.
But that's a great example too. We were talking just a little while ago about the Bundesliga and being on at the same time as the Premier League, pretty much, and that 9:30 to 10 o'clock window. You mean after the early game, after the Chelsea Arsenal game, you've got half an hour there. I mean, again, this is something that I think a lot of people will stick around to see if there's some live footage of Arlo and Graham and Lee kind of racing away in motorbikes. Past Big Ben and the London Eye and things like that. So it gives you a reason to keep on watching it all the way through to probably even the last game on Saturday. And with the Bundesliga, it's, especially with, Keith Costigan, Eric Winalda, Ian Joy, in a studio, in a very sterile atmosphere in Los Angeles. They're doing a great job with what they have, but they're not pulling you into those broadcasts. And I think this is a good example of NBC trying to push the envelope a little bit and try something different. Yeah, it's a bit corny, but I'll watch it. It'll be interesting to see kind of what they get up to. Okay, Kartik, so let's move on to the next segment, which is TV ratings. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one just because we've posted all the latest information from this past week at worldsoccertalk.com, and it has all of the TV ratings for every single match that's been played. Club or country across the US TV for the past week. I did want to point out a couple of things. One is we kind of talked about this in the first episode, first segment, which is the Bundesliga. And this past weekend was another poor example, unfortunately. But it's one of those things. I mean, from the Fox Sports' perspective, the FA Cup gets higher priority than the Bundesliga, which pushes the Bundesliga to FS2. So, for example, from this past weekend, the Leverkusen against Gladbach game, which actually, that's the one that you said was on Fox Sports, Fox Soccer Plus. So maybe we'll skip that one, because there was some basically kind of... Well, let me go look at the Friday game. The Friday game was Schalke against Frankfurt. That one was definitely on the FS2. That one on the English language FS2 side got 16,000 viewers.
Although I think they did show Leverkusen Gladbach in another time slot. They didn't show it live on FS2.
Okay.
So there is a number from Saturday for it. But it was just shown. It was shown at some other time.
Okay. But still, 16,000. I mean, FS2 is kind of like the... If you want to put anything on television and kind of guarantee it's going to get horrible ratings, FS2 is kind of like the last bastion of that. So for the FS2 game on Friday, 16,000 people, that's horrible. Championship matches on BN Sports, kind of a derby against Wigan or something like that, those are averaging higher than those numbers there. I think the championship averages about 17,000 to 18,000 viewers, which is pretty decent for games that kind of clash with other leagues. But yeah. Still, poor numbers. But the game on... Actually, the Leverkusen game against Gladbach was also on Fox Deportes on Sunday, and that one did better. That had 122,000. And again, you have to look at that and say, okay, well, that's definitely the Chicharito effect on that one. And then, Kartik, did you get a chance to look at the USA-Serbia numbers? I know you didn't get a chance to watch it.
Yeah, I saw the game.
Neither did I.
I thought that that was a remarkably high number for an absolutely meaningless game. It was close to 600,000 on ESPN2 and 118,000 on Univision Deportes. And if I'm not mistaken, if I'm it was going up against something NFL related, I think the Pro Bowl, which was on ESPN proper. So it was a pretty decent number for an absolutely meaningless B friendly. And ESPN, as I mentioned, did the studio with Salazar, who's new to them, Sebastian Salazar, who's done quite well, actually, in his time at ESPN now. Hercules Gomez, who they just hired the previous week, and Casey Keller. And then they flew Ian Dark over for this game, which I guess maybe he was able to do it because there was no Premier League games. It was this coincidence that they played the same weekend as FA Cup games, because I'm sure he would have had a game for VT or for Premier League productions otherwise. Mm-hmm. So they got a decent number for that, and that was surprising. And then I thought another really surprising number was the Real Madrid Real Sociedad number. We see BN's numbers, even as BN subscribers were declining, we're seeing their numbers for La Liga climb. 540,000 between BN Sports and BN Sports in Espanol. The question will have to be asked at some point about La Liga, if they went to a more mainstream channel, what kind of numbers they would get if they could compete with the Premier League. But I guess that's a topic for another day.
Yeah. That's 540,000. That's huge for them. That's a big number. Over at Liga MX, Club America's 1-0 defeat of Veracruz averaged 1.3 million viewers on Univision and Univision Deportes, making it the fifth most watched Liga MX game of the Clausura thus far. This also marks the fourth consecutive week that at least one Liga MX match has averaged an audience of larger than 1 million. So Liga MX continues to be strong.
We're gonna get to this in a few minutes, but this is why, again, I don't rate San Diego as a market that MLS should go into. I think with a Liga MX team right across the border that's accessible to fans in San Diego, it's you're competing with a superior league with superior fan base and probably superior television package. So. But we'll get to that in our featured topic of the week.
Ah, a teaser. Okay. And then moving on to the next segment, which is listener mailbag. Just a couple of messages this week from our listeners. The first one is from John Patrick Manning via Twitter. And he said that Earthquake fans, who are a great fan base, are like the Orlando fans you described, Kartik. Many don't follow the rest of MLS. True of many MLS clubs. A real problem for the league. If I'm watching the Quakes, that's my club. If I'm not watching, I'm watching Man United or Premier League or UEFA Champions League. Sure, I try to catch a little bit of other MLS teams, but MLS is a really a local phenomenon. Major League Baseball is similar these days also. Any thoughts on that one, Kartik?
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. And then me too. And then Dave Brunk sent a message in through email. He says, thank you for your great work on the pods and frequent updates on Twitter. I feel like I would miss out a lot of the FA Cup and Bundesliga coverage on FS1 and FS2 if it wasn't for you guys. And Kartik, it's weird because actually in some ways Fox does such a poor job of promoting its own coverage that's kind of an area that Will Soccer Talk steps into and actually tries to get the information out there. So just as one example is the FA Cup fifth round matches. We've gone ahead and published the TV schedule for that. And Fox Sports probably won't publicly announce that until probably a week to 10 days from now. So you know, it's one of those things that I don't know if they're just slammed at Fox Sports or just like taking their time. But it gives us the opportunity here at World Soccer Talk to kind of share the information and get the details out on where you can watch the games and how and what times, so you can plan ahead, plan your weekends, etc.
Yeah.
Okay, Kartik, last segment of the show, and I'll let you run with this one, but it's the feature topic of the week, and you wrote a great story this week that we published at worldsoccertalk.com. The headline was Evaluating the 12 MLS Expansion Cities Through the Lens of Future TV Contracts. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, and I know people are parochial to one market or another, people who live in those markets, and those folks have tried to poke holes in in my theories, other than San Antonio, who's given, including the club itself, has given me some data boys on it. But I looked at the 12 expansion markets. I think there's been a lot of talk about ownership, facilities. I mean, all the stuff that's so important when you're talking about MLS, either starting a club from scratch, as they would in a couple cases, or in most cases, promoting a lower division club. We do have promotion in the United States. I mean, the majority of teams that have come into MLS in the last 10 years have done so having existed at the lower division level. But there is still a massive threshold from a business standpoint and a facility standpoint and an operational standpoint you have to meet to be promoted. So there's been a number of great series about that. In Soccer America, Brian Strauss over at SI.com, Jeff Carlisle at ESPN FC, et cetera, et cetera, 55-1. Over in Minnesota, doing great knock-up coverage of this. So I decided to take it from a TV perspective because I really believe MLS is in this mode where they're getting a little bit paranoid about television ratings. And we talk about this on the show regularly. And they're also concerned about their ability to break into the Hispanic market using Univision as a television partner. So looking at TV market size and looking at the size of the Hispanic market in each of those places. The conclusion I came to was, even though you have such a great, successful lower division team right now with FC Cincinnati, you've got the market size of Detroit, overall market size of Detroit, and the success of Detroit City FC, who are not part of the MLS bid, by the way. And you've got other markets like Indianapolis and Raleigh-Durham, that have very, very successful lower division clubs that are bidding to become part of MLS, that a lot of this determination is going to be made on TV. But then if facilities and political considerations come into play also. So the one market I think is going to get MLS this time that does not have the overall profile from a television and metropolitan area standpoint is San Antonio. And I know people's minds are blown that I possibly think San Antonio could get a team instead of a Detroit or a Phoenix, which are very, very big markets, which are markets that are basically twice the size or more of San Antonio. But San Antonio is a very big Hispanic market. One of Univision's most watched affiliate channels is in San Antonio, is in the San Antonio TV market. Univision is a television partner of Major League Soccer. In the San Antonio Spurs, they have a perfect ownership partner who owns another major league sports team in the NBA. San Antonio Spurs own San Antonio FC, the USL club. The USL club and previously the NASL club, the San Antonio Scorpions, have consistently drawn over 7,000 fans a game, regardless of how good or bad the team has been for five successive seasons. You don't have that happen in the minor leagues of American soccer. And they have a facility, and they have all the political support they need. They have a turn. They have a stadium. They just have a. Then they already have the turnkey plan to expand that stadium to MLS capacity. So I think San Antonio is in there. I've got St. Louis in there for the obvious sentimental reasons and the size of the television market and the fact that MLS really wants to be in there. Sacramento. I know there's been a lot of kerfuffle lately, Chris, about Sacramento Republic, who for me are the most successful team at the lower division level over the last few years. Suddenly their ownership being pushed aside and another bid coming from Sacramento. Sacramento was the most logical add to MLS. As I said, they've had the most successful lower division team the last few years. It is the 20th largest television market in the country, per Nielsen. It is the 11th largest Hispanic television market in the country, per Nielsen. So, the 9th largest Hispanic market in the country, per Nielsen. So it's an easy selection. They're going to add four teams, MLS. One, I think everybody had thought this whole process would be Sacramento. Now there's suddenly some internal issues in Sacramento, but I think they'll get worked out. MLS themselves have said they want the parties to get together and get this worked out. They don't want to be walking into a soccer war in a market, which I am almost positive they want to add. I think there really are three spots up, not four, and Sacramento is getting in. So that will be worked out. I've also got Tampa Bay making it because of the size of the market, the strength of the bid from the Tampa Bay Rowdies, who are in the USL, and their stadium situation. They're right on the water. They're they own the land. They're able to expand that pretty quickly, and they have all the political support they need locally in the city of St. Petersburg. The one concern about them is the proximity to Orlando, which is one of MLS's signature flagship franchises, and an hour and a half away. I did the drive in September when I went to a Rowdies game against the Carolina Railhawks in NASL. I did the drive from east of downtown Orlando, if you're familiar with Central Florida, from the corner, from the shopping center at the corner of Colonial and Bumby, to Al Lang Stadium in an hour and a half. So that's east. That's actually east of the Citrus Bowl. That's like 15 minutes east of where Orlando City plays. So they're close. I got Raleigh-Durham as my fifth market, by the way. I think MLS is very impressed with the ownership group there. I think they're impressed with the soccer community there, college soccer support, youth soccer support, support for European football. TV market is large enough. It's not terribly large, but it's large enough. And they will want to see how the NWSL team does this year there, and probably won't make the decision until after we see the kind of crowds NWSL generates. But those are my five. But I have to stress this, Chris. There has not been enough emphasis on the size of TV markets and Nielsen markets as MLS has to negotiate a new contract with each of their television partners, Soccer United Marketing on behalf of MLS, starting in the 2022 season. I believe that negotiation will start in 2020, and you're going to want to have these expansion teams in place and guarantees that certain television markets are covered. So I would expand upon this. I would say that MLS would probably have 28 teams by then, or 28 teams that have been announced, and they may even tell the television networks, hey, in the next round of expansion, the final round of expansion, we are going to add Detroit and Phoenix because they're huge markets, to get more money out of the television companies.
Yeah, yeah, and it's great that you did this article too. I mean, the article goes into pros and cons for each of the 12 cities that have filed their expansion bids. And it comes from a perspective that you can't find anywhere else in terms of how important the TV ratings are to MLS and these TV markets. So it goes through each and every one of the 12 expansion cities and mentions where they rank with Nielsen in terms of the TV market size. And it is interesting, too, because the San Antonio one, too, Carter, like you mentioned, too, with a large Hispanic population, and we've seen kind of how the how that is helping boost Univision's TV ratings. And that could be a huge opportunity there for Univision and MLS to grow its Spanish language TV numbers.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, people keep asking, why is it that MLS is making all these exceptions to their own rules for the Miami team, for David Beckham? Is it because of Beckham? Is it why? They don't do this for any other market. It's because of that. The Miami-Fort Lauderdale television market is ranked third among Hispanic viewers in the country. And so, and the neighboring markets, West Palm Beach market and the Fort Myers market actually have enough Hispanic viewers that would bump it to second. So that's the consideration with Miami. The Miami-Fort Lauderdale market is third, according to Nielsen. And I had thought San Antonio was a sleeper all along, and then when I thought about the Hispanic angle and the Miami angle to it and why Miami's getting all these all this extra time, I realized, yeah, I think San Antonio has a very good shot at this, even though they've just kind of been written off by a lot of people who cover the sport, a lot of people I respect and a lot of people who normally call it right. I think they're underestimating San Antonio's appeal.
Yeah, Kartik, and I don't think you know this, but it's no surprise that Tim Holt, the managing director of San Antonio FC, after you posted that story, followed us on Twitter. So yeah, I have a feeling he probably agrees with you. But
yeah, and I know Tim Holt. Obviously, he's spent most of his recent professional life here in the state of Florida, Tampa, running USL, and then going to Orlando to be the number two in that organization. I can't remember what his title was, executive vice president or whatever. And he, I think he probably followed because he was happy with that. But I think San Antonio is a sleeper. And that's another contributing factor. Tim Holt is an experienced soccer executive. He's running that organization. A lot of these other bids are with guys that may not have the experience or seasoning or the political relationships within U.S. soccer and Major League Soccer that Tim Holt does. And they've got the San Antonio Spurs, and they've got this underrated television market. I think it's And they've got a stadium, and they've got all the political support there. I think they're going to get in.
And that's the thing, Kartik, too. I mean, like, so the average soccer fan in the U.S. is probably looking at these 12 expansion cities and looking at it from a different angle, which is fine. But they might look at, say, Cincinnati and say, okay, Cincinnati is a slam dunk MLS team. They're going to make it. They've got big crowds. But from a business perspective, and you and I know very well that MLS is a very business-centric league, they're looking at TV contracts, especially when they're renegotiated, looking at bigger numbers, and they will be coming to the table with the TV market.
Cincinnati is such a tough one, Chris. I mean, I'm sorry to cut you off, sure. But it just tugs at my heart because they've done it right? And they outdraw like a fourth of MLS or a third of MLS in terms of supporting what was a third division team last year will be a second division team this year. But it's just not a big enough market based on the way MLS works.
Right.
Will they make an exception for it? Possibly, but I just don't think they will.
And those ticket numbers for Cincinnati look a lot more authentic than some of the other MLS clubs that kind of just
pass along. Yeah, no, they're
actually,
they have more fans at their games. They're selling more tickets than a lot of teams in MLS. Yeah. Than maybe, as I said, maybe a third of the teams in MLS. But actually, they might have more people in the stands than about half the teams in MLS. But it's a small market, and it's also very close to Columbus, which is an original MLS team. You could argue they would an original MLS team in a smallish market itself, which could be detrimentally impacted by Cincinnati.
It just goes to show, I mean, in terms of the TV contracts, how important those are for Major League Soccer, and how it will impact their decision in terms of which cities to expand to. So Kartik, what happens though if Miami does pull out and Beckham says, okay, basically I'm giving up this whole thing after 3 years, I'm unable to make a deal, and unfortunately, you know, whatever happens, but it's over. What do you see MLS doing then? Do you see them kind of opening, having five?
I think they have five, and then the question is, does that mean Tampa, St. Pete gets in without a fight because that adds another team in Florida, or the San Antonio get in without a fight because that adds another big Hispanic market? I think it's one of those two get in automatically if Miami is out. Probably Tampa, St. Pete, but it could be San Antonio. It could actually be the thing that opens the door for San Diego to get in also. Our former colleague here at World Soccer Talk, Richard Farley, and I have talked a lot about both the San Diego and Miami markets, and don't want to spoil too much of anything, but I don't think Richard's too high on either market when you compare it to these other places we're talking about, Sacramento, San Antonio, Tampa Bay, Raleigh, Durham type places. But I think that it probably opens the door, it probably locks down Tampa, St. Pete, or San Antonio, and probably opens the door for San Diego to get in this round of expansion.
Yeah, and not only is this TV contracts in terms of kind of just inflating those numbers, but also helps out on the advertising side, sponsorships. So it's big business for MLS, and they're definitely looking at it from that angle. So Kartik shines a great deal of light on each of the cities, and again, the pros and cons. And you can find that story at worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, so where can listeners find you on Twitter to kind of stay in touch?
You can always find me at KKFLA737. My DMs are open. Feel free to DM me. I follow most people who interact with me, who have a point of view, whether it jives with mine or not, as long as you're not abusive like some people on Twitter. You can find me at various other sites, obviously, worldsoccertalk.com being the most important, prominent of them.
Yeah, and for any of the listeners, if you have any questions about watching television or streaming, or have any opinions to share or feedback, we'd love to get that, and we'd love to read it out on air. You can contact us through email at web@worldsoccertalk.com, through Twitter at WSoccerTalk, or through Facebook through facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. So thank you for listening this week. We really appreciate your loyalty, and you can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, and be sure to send us your feedback or questions so we'll read those out on air. And Kartik, over to you, sir.
Enjoy your football.